Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Objection and Dispute Resolution Conference. During today's presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, the conference will be open for your questions. If you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touch-tone phone. If you need to withdraw your question, press the star followed by the two. And if you're using speaker equipment today, you may need to lift your handset before making your selection. Today's conference is being recorded, January 29th, 2013. I would now like to turn the conference over to Michelle Jordan. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for the Objection and Dispute Resolution webinar. I'm Michelle Jordan, manager of New GTLD Communications for ICANN. We'll get started with the presentations in just a minute, but first I want to go over a few things about the webinar. First, the webinar will be recorded, and playback will be available on the webinar page of the New GTLD microsite shortly after the conclusion of this session. We will have a question and answer period at the end of the presentations, and we encourage you to dial in and ask your questions via the phone line. The numbers are listed there on the left of the slide. Again, press 1 to get in the queue, and press star 1 to get in the queue, and to drop out of the queue, dial star 2. When you dial in, please let the operator know your name, affiliation, and whether your question is general or specific to one of the dispute resolution service providers. You can also submit your questions through the question and comments pod in Adobe Connect. Again, please indicate if your question is general or for a specific provider, but we will be giving priority to questions coming in through the phone lines, and we'll answer the other questions as time permits. Again, all the information about this webinar, including the Adobe Connect link, dial-in numbers, and the presentation, can be found on the webinar page of the New GTLD microsite. For those of you who may not be familiar with the New GTLD microsite, it can be found at newgtlds.icann.org, and you can get to the webinar page by clicking on Webinar Series on the blue bar beneath the rotating banner. And with that, I'll turn it over to Christine Ouellette, Vice President, GTLD Operations.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you all for joining us. It's a pleasure to be able to speak with you today to discuss the objection process for the New GTLD program. We are going to cover a lot of material today, so I will be brief. I'll be discussing background of the objection process for the New GTLD program. Then we will be joined by representatives from our dispute resolution service providers, and they will be speaking on each of their individual processes. So we welcome their participation. Then I'll come back for a brief wrap-up, and we will then move on to entertaining questions. As some of you know, who've been part of the ICANN New GTLD community and the program, ICANN received 1,930 applications for new GTLDs, and we currently have 1,917 active applications after withdrawal. This is really an exciting time for ICANN, for the TLD community, the DNS industry, and we're looking at the expansion. This program is anticipated to expand the Internet as we know it. As Internet users, you all have the ability to review and look at the applied for new GTLDs. And in some cases, you also have the ability to file a formal objection for applications which you have concerns about. The public review process allows everyone to learn what GTLDs are being applied for in case they have reason to object, for reasons such as protecting their rights or for other legitimate interests. For instance, if someone is applying for another organization or individual's trademark, or if an organization represents a community and it believes that an apply for GTLD would be a misrepresentation of that community. And this objection time frame is your opportunity to object to and potentially stop an applied for GTLD from being approved. The objection period has been extended to the 13th of March, 2013, and there are four grounds for objection, which are described in the applicant guidebook. These grounds include string confusion, legal rights, limited public interest, and community objection. The string confusion objection can be used if a string so nearly resembles another that it's likely to cause confusion. The legal rights objection can be used if the potential use of the applied for GTLD by the applicant takes unfair advantage of the distinctive character or the reputation of the objector's registered or unregistered trademark. For example, if you're a trademark owner, you could object to the use of a specific name. Limited public interest objections may be used if the applied for GTLD string is contrary to the general principles of international law for morality and public order. And the community objection may be used if there's a substantial opposition from a significant portion of the community to which the string may be targeted. ICANN has contracted with several dispute resolution service providers to assist us in the objection process. If you wish to object to a specific applied for GTLD, you will find the rules and procedures on how to object, and if you qualify for them, on the new GTLD website, newgtlds.icann.org. ICANN has also appointed an independent objector who acts solely in the best interests of global Internet users. He may also lodge limited public interest and community objections in cases where no other objection is made to an application that the independent objector otherwise deems to be objectionable. Standing. There are requirements for individuals to have standing, organizations to have standing for their objections. For string confusion objections, TLD operators or applicants would have standing to file such an objection. Rights holders, trademark holders, would have standing to file legal rights objections. Established institutions would have standing to file community objections, while anyone can file a limited public interest objection. Filing a dispute. Dispute resolution proceedings will be administered by independent dispute resolution service providers, not by ICANN. Filing of online objections will, with appropriate dispute resolution service providers, will be available in English. There will be filing fees required, and there will be a specific process to be followed for each type of objection. The organizations you see here are our dispute resolution service provider organizations. ICDR is managing the string confusion objections. WIPO is responsible for the legal rights objections, and ICC is handling limited public interest and community objections. I will let them speak to specific fees and details as they join on. And moving on to the independent objector, Professor Alain Palette is our independent objector. He is acting solely in the best interest of all global Internet users. He, as I mentioned, he has the ability and may be lodging limited public interest and community objections if no other objections are made. And they're on the screen at independent-objector-newgtlds.org. That is the website for Professor Alain Palette. So at this point, I will take this opportunity to transition to Thomas, who's going to be joining us for and presenting for ICDR.
Okay, thank you. Hello, all. My name is Thomas Centrone. I'm a vice president with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the ICDR. I'm just going to briefly tell you a little bit about our organization, and then I'll go into the process as we have designed it with, in conjunction with ICANN, for the disputes that arise under string confusion. Okay. Just give me a moment. First, briefly, the ICDR, the International Center for Dispute Resolution, is a division of the American Arbitration Association. We are headquartered here in New York, and our role is to manage disputes, primarily commercial disputes, that occur between parties through contracts involving all cross-border activity. We were established in 1996 as that division, and we've had the largest number of international commercial arbitration filings in the last 5 years. We have a panel, some of these which will become members of our panel of experts, which I'll talk to later. We have a panel of over 650 worldwide independent mediators, arbitrators, decision makers who are familiar with the process of dispute resolution and can work with the parties to reach the resolution they so desire. Let's talk to what we were selected to administer, and that is the string confusion objections. As was described, there are four of them, and this is the first one outlined. And most importantly is the standing to object that we will review upon the filing of an objection. The only standing under 3.2.2.1 of the procedures put out by ICANN is an existing TLD operator asserting confusion between an applied for GTLD and the current TTLD that it operates, or any current GTLD applicant in this round asserting confusion between another GTLD applicant. So those are the only 2 points and matters of standing for string confusion. If you have this standing and you choose to file an objection, here's how you will go about it. We have a system in place called WebFile. It is a proprietary system of the American Arbitration Association and the International Center for Dispute Resolution. It is available online. The link will be available, I believe, through the ICANN GTLD page. But for your information, it's simply icdr.org. That is our homepage, and on that page there'll be a button for filing a case. If you click on that, it'll take you right into our web file system. You'll register there. It has 24/7 availability. Payments will be processed through there. All the document upload and the case status will be managed through there. So all the parties, including the expert later on, will have access through this web file system to all parts of the case as it develops and moves forward. Once in WebFile, you'll select, because we do many different types of cases, you'll select the ICANN GTLD string confusion procedure rules, request an expert determination, and then begin complete an online form, which will require the objector information, applicant information, the string, upload any documents you wish under the limit of what was set forth in the ICANN procedures of 5,000 words or 20 pages, and pay your filing fee. The initial filing fee, administrative fee for filing an objection, is $2,750. There may be additional fees later on for expert compensation, depending on how the matter progresses. Once you've completed this filing, we'll acknowledge receipt. We'll perform an administrative review to make sure all the information is there in compliance with the ICANN procedures. We will advise you if incorrectly filed. We will allow for correction of that deficiency, and even if that correction takes us past the deadline of March 13, it will be deemed, if you correct it properly, deemed filed in time. There could be a dismissal of the objection on administrative grounds, especially if you do not reply to any correction request. Once finalized, once complete, once everything's in place, we will notify you of the completed objection filing. We will maintain a form similar to the one shown here on our website that will continually be updated on a daily basis of any and all objections received. And this is the same report that ICANN will have access to as well outlining what objections the ICBR has received to date. So as I said, continually update. As I believe is still the case, ICANN will publish their dispute announcement 30 days, within 30 days from the close of the objection period. Once that's published, we will initiate our notice to applicants of the objections filed against their application. Once the applicant is noticed, they have 30 days to reply. Same process is in place for the correction of deficiencies. Failure to reply is considered a default, and the objector and the objection will be sustained. The responses shall contain the name and contact, the point-by-point response to the objector statements, and filing fees as well, the same filing fees that were due from the objector. There may be a possible consolidation of objections as we receive them. We will do that administrative review here and decide. Obviously, if the same string is objected to, we will take a close look at the basis of those objections to see if they can be consolidated and decided under a single matter. We will encourage in our writings and our communications, and I encourage you all here to consider negotiation and mediation so that we do not have to rely on the decision of an expert, but parties can reach some kind of agreement when supported by a mediator to help them achieve a resolution that might be suitable for all. A little bit about the expert panel, the string confusion panel. They'll have a minimum of 15 years of senior level professional experience, including experience in domain name disputes, WIPO disputes, internet, intellectual property disputes, and some other areas. They are very experienced in the dispute resolution processes of arbitration, mediation, and other decision-making processes. They will be free from bias and prejudice, and you'll see within the procedures there will be a requirement that they disclose anything that might suggest that they have any kind of conflict in place with either of the parties. If that's the case, they'll be removed and another expert will be appointed. And they've been trained in our code of ethics, which is also available on our website, and are located in various locations throughout the world. All the parties' information, as suggested earlier, will be uploaded through our web file system. The expert will have access to that system, will review all the uploaded submissions, may ask for further submissions, that is their prerogative, and they will decide the issue based on the documents submitted. There is no anticipation of a hearing taking place. However, one can be requested. If one is granted by the arbitrator, they will decide whether one should take place, and only under extraordinary circumstances. It is the objector's burden to sustain the objection. So they have the burden of proof in this matter, and the expert will issue a written reasoned determination. Depending on who is successful in the process, the filing fees and any other fees paid, including for expert compensation, will be refunded to the successful party. So although all parties are submitting the full compensation and fees due at the outset, one party will get those funds returned to them. I think that is all I have at this time. I'm happy to answer questions as we move forward later in the process, but that is just a brief overview of the ICBR and what we plan to do for string confusion objections. At this time, I think, I'm not sure if I'll turn it back, but maybe I should just turn it over to David from WIPO.
Thanks very much, Thomas. This is David Roach-Turner from WIPO. I had the Excuse me a moment. I'm just trying to get control of my presentation here. Anyway, perhaps I could ask somebody there at ICANN to move through the presentation as I go. The first slide, please. If you could move it forward. Great. I'm going to be talking very briefly about the legal rights objection mechanisms, a mechanism which we administer here at WIPO. We also do UDRP disputes, but I'll be speaking here about the LRO mechanism. As Christine mentioned in the introduction, it's a mechanism that provides trademark owners with a means to object to new GTLD applications. Next slide, please. The standing requirement in order to make use of this mechanism is that the objector is able to show that they have either registered or unregistered trade or service marks, or that they're an IGO, an international governmental organisation with a name or an acronym. So one of these two standing requirements needs to be met in order to access the mechanism. We are responsible for appointing an independent panel who would then determine whether the applicant's objection to the applied GTLD would be likely to infringe the objector's trademark or the objector's IGO name or acronym, as the case may be. Next slide, please. The availability, incidentally, of the legal rights objection mechanism does not necessarily preclude court options. As Christine mentioned in the introduction, the filing window for the LRO closes on March 13 this year, there's a period of months after March 13 during which the LRO procedure will run its course. Essentially, we would expect it to have concluded by August, as you can see there on the slide. The next slide provides just a graphical representation of the way the process operates from ICANN's, as it then was, draft applicant guidebook, and this sets out the way that the mechanism operates. Key phases to note after the filing of the any objections is the conduct by the provider, being WIPO, of the administrative compliance review. This is not a substantive assessment of the objection, but rather a check to ensure that the objection meets the necessary procedural requirements of the rules. And if it does, then about 30 days after that, the proceedings are formally commenced. The applicant, the respondent, has a period of 30 days in which to submit any response. If a response is forthcoming, the WIPO Centre will then look at the question of any consolidation of complaints that had been received, in light also of any responses that may be received. And I'll talk a little bit about how the consolidation principles will operate momentarily. We then are responsible for the appointment of an expert panel in cases where a response is received. In the event that there is no response received and the case is a default, then the matter is resolved successfully in favour of the complainant without need for a panel to be appointed. Next slide, please. Those stages that I just briefly discussed are reflected here on the slide, and also the number of days that are available for each of them. Next slide. The criteria that a complainant would need to address in its filed objection are mentioned up here on the slide. Essentially, the objector would need to persuade the expert panel that the applicant, in its applied for GTLD string, is either taking unfair advantage of the distinctive character or reputation of the trademark or the IGO name or acronym, or that the string unjustifiably impairs the distinctive character or reputation of that trademark, or that it otherwise creates an impermissible likelihood of confusion. And the mechanism which ICANN has prescribed, next slide please, also provides some guidance on relevant considerations that an expert panel can take account of in making this assessment. and which obviously it would be helpful for a filing objector to address in any complaint. And you can see those listed there on the slide. Essentially, they include considering the degree of identity or similarity between the applied for string and the relied on trademark, any objector bona fides, for example, with respect to the acquisition or use of the mark or IGO name or acronym, relevant recognition by the public, etc. There are a range of similar considerations which would apply in respect of any complaint that would be filed by an IGO concerning its name or acronym. Next slide, please. The filing fees at WIPO are up here on the slide, and you can see those filing fees are in the amount of $10,000 for each party, which is due on filing of the objection or the response respectively, and this comprises a non-refundable US $2,000 fee to cover the centre's administration of the dispute, and an additional component which comprises $8,000 for the expert or the panel, and the $8,000 payable to the panel is refundable to the prevailing party. There are different fee arrangements which apply to three-member panels and also in consolidation scenarios, and there's some more information which is available about those, which I'll refer you to towards the end of the presentation. But the thing to note is that any fees that would be refunded, for example, on the basis of a consolidation scenario, would be refunded to the appropriate party from the initial filing fee after the close of the proceedings. Also, as noted, non-payment of fees by an objector will result in rejection of the objection without any panel appoint being necessary, and likewise, non-payment of a response fee by an applicant will also result in the objection being deemed successful, and then there would be a corresponding refund of the panel fee to the relevant party on that basis. Next slide, please. In all cases, as mentioned by Christine, the relevant language of proceedings is English, although there is provision for evidence that's appropriately accompanied by a certificate of translation being included. In terms of the substantive word limits, this is 5,000 or 20 pages is the maximum prescribed, either for an objection or a response. Next slide, please. In terms of the LRO expert that we would be appointing, as Thomas mentioned, we would also be requiring our appointed expert to affirm their neutrality, and there's a statement of acceptance and declaration that which would need to be signed and returned for that purpose to us. Then, assuming that independence is affirmed, we would appoint a panel that would either be a single member panel, which we would appoint at our sole discretion, and there would be a range of consideration factors that we would take into account there, including, for example, the geographic location of the parties and any particular language needs that may come up in the case. For example, if there would be evidence in one language or another, for example, it might be relevant. Alternately, where both parties or all parties in the case of a consolidation agree, there is scope for the appointment of a three-member panel. In the case of a three-member panel where the parties agree to that, it would then be a situation in which each party would submit a list of three candidates from the centre's list of experts, and we will then provide the parties with a list of five candidates from which the parties will have the option to submit respective rankings for that presiding panellist, and we'd make the appointment of that presiding panellist on the basis of those party express preferences in a manner that reasonably balances them. Next slide, please. We have a very lengthy list of over 100 experts, which is drawn from the Centre's very long list of UDRP panellists. There's a vast body of collective experience there, which you can see distilled on the slide. Next slide. The remedies are limited to the provision of an expert determination, so no monetary damages or costs that can be awarded. But as mentioned earlier, the prevailing party is entitled to a partial refund, being the panel fee. The determination that's then rendered by the expert is, of course, without prejudice to any determination under either of the other types of ICANN objection mechanisms which we're discussing today. Next slide, please. I mentioned consolidation. Where there are cases of multiple objections filed against the same applicant, essentially to streamline costs and efficiency, where it's feasible, the centre will seek to consolidate these objections for determination by a single panel. We'll make that determination in light of any response that would be received. And we'd need to make a separate determination for each objection, depending on the particular circumstances. Generally speaking, we're going to be taking into account a range of factors, including, for example, whether or not the same or similar applications are at issue, whether either of the parties has lodged any request or objection in favour of consolidation, the nature of the trademark's evidence relied upon, the degree of similarity of that evidence, and expert availability, among other things. Next slide, please. LRO decisions, typically the expert determinations themselves are, unless the panel would determine otherwise, expected to be published in full on the Centre's website, and upon registering an objection for processing, the Centre will post on our website certain information which you can see there distilled up there on the slide, the proposed string, the names of the parties, the basic grounds of the objection, i.e. in our case LRO, and the date of the receipt of that objection by the Centre. Next slide, please. If you do want further information, obviously we've got some questions, question time afterwards, very happy to get into any of those. Some reference points on our website to a range of resources that we make available for purposes of assisting parties to use this mechanism. And if you would like further information, next slide, please. I would also invite you to have a quick look through the FAQs which we've posted on our website, which provide answers to a range of the questions which we most commonly hear from potentially interested parties. So thanks very much. Last slide. And just some web references if you want some further information both on this mechanism and WIPO's work on new GCLD's mechanisms more generally. They're up there on the slide. So thanks very much for that. And I'll turn over to the next speaker now, which is Hannah from the ICC.
Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening from Paris. I'm Hannah Temple from the ICC, the International Chamber of Commerce, based in Paris. And I'm heading the ICC International Centre for ADR, which is one of the two departments at ICC dealing with dispute resolution. And in that capacity, I will explain to you a bit of the background of the procedures which will be administered by the ICC. The current slide you see shows the background or the division of dispute resolution services at the International Chamber of Commerce. I have put this because some people have asked about the relation between the Centre and the ICC International Court of Arbitration, and with this I wanted to clarify that all cases related to the new GTLD procedures will be administered by the International Centre for Expertise, which is part of the ADR department of ICC, which is entirely separate from the ICC International Court of Arbitration. The centre consists of a team of international lawyers. We are all based in Paris, but all of our cases take place all over the world. And, of course, as in any other ICC proceeding, none of the cases have to have any relation to France or to Paris itself. As it was mentioned before, ICC will administer cases based on two of the total four grounds for objections. More specifically, the limited public interest objection, as well as the community objection. As you know, there are different set of rules which will govern these proceedings, and the speakers before me, of course, already made reference to that. The first important one, of course, is the new GTLD dispute resolution procedure as set out by ICANN. And this set of procedure is now there are some additional rules now which will apply for the ICC rules, which are the ICC rules for expertise, a specific practice note which we have published online with regard to these cases, as well as a new appendix 3 to the case to the ICC expertise rules, which is also available online. I point this out because I think it's important that you realize that there are four different sources of documents which you need to read together. as you know from the ICANN rules, if there should be anything contradictory, which there shouldn't be, but if there should be, then the ICANN rules would prevail. A couple of general principles about the cases administered by us, and many of these principles are completely in line with the cases administered by WIPO or ICDR, because really they stem from the ICANN dispute resolution procedure. So the procedures will be fully administered by ICC if you file one of the on the grounds of one of the two objections mentioned. Electronic documents only will be allowed unless there's specific different decision from ICC. All procedures take place in English, so different to some other ICC procedures which often take place in other cases, these cases only take place in English. We provide a model form for the objection and responses. There will be a scrutiny of the expert determination conducted by ICC, which will be with regard to the form of the expert determination. There will not be an expert mission as usually foreseen in the ICC rules for expertise. ICC will appoint the experts, and as already also mentioned, especially by Tom, we do strongly encourage parties to try to settle their cases also by means of mediation. And if you want to stay within the same institution, we encourage you to file such mediations under the ICC ADR rules, the ICC mediation. The following two slides are a sort of chronological run through the different steps in the procedures. I propose not to repeat this now because I think David has already gone through the different timelines which apply. Maybe if there are any specific questions with regard to that, we can come back later on. One question which I was asked is whether there's any sort of time advantage depending on how early you file your objection or how late you file it. And as you know, actually there will not be a difference in the way how we administer the proceedings, because anyway, before we invite the applicants to submit their response, we first need to wait for ICANN's dispute announcement, which will only be issued within 30 days after closing of the objection period, so probably in April 2013. And before that, we will not further, apart from the first review of the cases, move forward with these. So said, there's a second slide, again, going through the different steps in the proceedings, including the 10 days which the parties will have to pay the cost after they are invited to do so by ICC, and then the subsequent transfer of the file to the expert panel, and the expert panel then also has 45 days to submit a draft decision to ICC. As I mentioned before, we will be administering cases based on two objection grounds. The first ones are community objections. The ground for these are that there's a substantial opposition to the GTLD application from a significant portion of the community to which the GTLD string may be explicitly or implicitly targeted. In these cases, we will appoint a one-member expert panel. The standing in order to be allowed to file these objections is set out in the ICANN Module 3 and the attachment to Model 3, and repeated on this slide, but I think I will not go into this for the time being. We can see whether there are more specific questions about that later on. Otherwise, it's important just to remember that the standing is exactly defined in the ICANN rules. Second ground of objections are the limited public interest objections, which will be administered by ICC. The ground for these are that the applied for GTLD string is contrary to generally accepted legal norms of morality and public order that are recognized under principles of international law. In these cases, we will appoint a three-member expert panel. So different to the community objections, there will be three members. And with regard to the background and substantive issues in these cases, I would like to refer you to Article 3.5.3 of Module 3 of the ICANN objection procedures, which sets out the background and the possible legal basis for these objections in more detail. As said before, ICC provides online an objection form as well as a response form which needs to be used if you want to file an objection, and if you're an applicant, if later on you're invited to file a response to the objection. It is available on our website. Again, on there you will also find the reminder to stick within the 5,000 word or 20 page limit. Please also, and to that the bottom round circle refers, please make sure that it is the version from December 2012, since we have since then provided an updated version. You will have to indicate on the objection form on which ground you base your objection. And you need to also, inter alia, indicate when you have proceeded with the payment, as well as when you have notified your objection to the applicant in ICAN. You find all other information about the proceedings on our website. There's another slide later on with the exact contact details. It is iccexpertise.org. And there's also the relevant email to which all documents in these cases must be sent, which is expertise@iccwbo.org. Which experts will we appoint? ICC doesn't have for any of its dispute resolution proceedings a closed list of experts. We rather work with an individual search of experts for each case in order to ensure that we have the most qualified people for the specific case and the specific circumstances of the case. As I said before, for community objections, we'll appoint one expert panel. For the others, we will appoint a pre-expert panel. We will, for these cases, in light of the short time limits, we are establishing a non-exclusive pool of potential experts from which we can then make the appointments. ICC has a network of national committees all around the world which are invited to submit nominations. And obviously, in each case, we will ensure that we only appoint independent and impartial experts, and that they are, of course, available to sit in the specific case within the short time frame provided. If you look into the ICC rules for expertise, you will also see that there's a requirement for each expert to disclose any circumstances which in the eyes of the parties might lead to questions about his or her independence. And further, the parties also have the option in the course of the proceeding, if something comes up which makes them doubt, have any doubts about the expert's independence, to object to that expert acting further in the case, and then ICC would take an according decision. The filing fee for the cases administered by ICC is 5,000 euros. The expert's hourly rate shall usually be 450 euros. From this, you can also see that the cases administered by ICC, the fees of the expert will be calculated on an hourly basis, so depending on the actual time spent. However, ICC has discretion in that, and we can fix the fees of the experts at the end at what we consider is a reasonable amount of time spent. The ICC administrative expenses shall usually not exceed $12,000 for a one-member expert panel, so for the community objections, and $17,000 for the three-member expert panel. Additionally, in case a hearing does take place, which, as you know, should rather be isn't the norm but rather an exception, then, of course, there could be additional expenses incurred by the experts, for example, for traveling. Usually, in case of a three-member expert panel, the fees will be distributed with 40% to the chair and 30% to the co-experts. Finally, as I said, there's the ICC website with all necessary information on www.iccexpertise.org. Where you can find all relevant documents, the model forms, list of cases, which will be published as cases are filed, and also then finally the publication of the expert determination of those which will be published. And the last slide, just again with our contact information, I think, and probably I can speak in that regard for all institutions, it's very important to remember that we are here to also facilitate your work and the general objection dispute resolution process. So if you have any questions or if things are not clear, I would strongly encourage you to contact us also outside from this webinar to make sure that we can clarify any outstanding issues. Thank you. I'm now passing back to Christine.
Anna, thank you so much. Just wrapping up here, wanted to discuss ICANN's funding and fees. ICANN does have funding available for ALAC in governmental objections. We've estimated that those fees could be $50,000, and ICANN will pay the cost for such objections, with the winner being reimbursed of that. The process for requesting funds is being developed and documented and will be posted to the microsite this week. So I think in conclusion, the new GTLD program is clearly going to be changing the Internet as we know it. If you haven't reviewed the applied for strings, you can do so at the new GTLD microsite, and you can object if you have standing and you believe it is warranted. So we're going to transition now, and we're going to start taking questions. I believe we have a few questions queued up in the phone queue. I will ask, can I ask the operator who we have online first in the phone queue?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we'll begin the question and answer session. As a reminder, if you have a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you need to withdraw your question, press the star followed by the 2. And if you're using speaker equipment today, you may need to lift your handset before making your selection. And our first question comes from the line of Abnud Abril with CORE. Please go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello, Christine. I have two questions. One is very, particular. In one of your last slides, there is estimated cost, $50,000. But I don't know whether you refer to a concrete type of objections, or is the average, or the median, or for all of them the maximum, or what it refers exactly, because I was not able to follow that online, and for some reason it escaped me. The general question, Christine, is regarding the timeline. And I have a few suggestions to you. It's not your fault, it's not my fault, it's not anybody's fault, but we've been changing things, and some of the dates doesn't make sense anymore because we have changed other dates. I give you an example. String similarities to be published on March 1st. The deadline, the current deadline for objections is March 13. It allows for exactly 7 working days for preparing a string contention. In case that, you don't agree with the panel not deciding that something is confusingly similar. This is too short. And we know that this March 1st could slip by 2 or 3 days. It wouldn't be a disaster, but it would be a disaster for the kind of objection. So why don't we simply say 15 days after publication of the string similarity panel results? So we don't need to think about that deadline anymore. Just put a relative date instead of an absolute date. If other things move, we can solve that. But I think that 15 days, which means 10 working days for most people, it's reasonable. And having just 3 or 4 days that could easily happen at the current situation, we should agree is probably, bound to accidents. Now, regarding the others, we also got that backwards. The original idea is to go from less, less fire gun power to more. That is, first we have the GAC advice, which is a sort
so,
of
Amadeus,
yes?
I'm so sorry, this is Christine. So before you move on, I heard two questions. One, you had a question about the $50,000 objection fee on the slide, as well as you had a comment about the timeline and a request about adjusting the objection time period. So I'd like to address those two questions. The $50,000 reference is ICANN's estimate of what we would likely pay in support of a government objection.
Okay.
So ICANN has indicated that we will pay for one objection by each government, and the total fees that we're estimating that that objection could result in is $50,000. So that is not for your individual filing fees. The dispute resolution providers have outlined their fee structure today for the various types of objections. In terms of timeline and the objection period, as you know, the many things about the program have changed since the guidebook was written and the anticipated timeline that was reflected in the guidebook. There are both there are a lot of relative dates that, based on the nature of the program and the number of applications far exceeding initial estimates, have caused a different timeline to be followed. So the objection period was extended to the March 13th date. We do understand that if string similarity contention sets are not published until March 1st, that will limit the window for objections after that, the publication of contention sets. However, that by working to that date, we are still anticipating that all objections would be filed prior to the Beijing meeting, which is a critical milestone in the program, as well by the end of the Beijing meeting, all responses to objections would be due with that 30-day period. So the relative date is an interesting one. It's certainly something to consider. I'm so sorry. I think, Amadeo, we might need to, if you could mute, thank you. However, if we are able to publish string similarity contention sets earlier, then I don't know that a relative date on the objection period would necessarily be favorable. So thank you for that feedback. I appreciate it. Thank you for participating.
I have, but the problem is not just for that one. It's for all of them. That date makes little sense, Christine. Let's think what there's in the guidebook and the logic.
Amadeo, do you have a question?
Yes, I have a question for asking you to delay until some relative dates later on for the other three kind of objections. Having all of them before GAC warning and before evaluations being published, and in the case of community, before community evaluation, doesn't make any sense, and it was not the plan. And it won't delay anything. If you're in contention, you are in contention. It won't be solved until September. So why putting the objection before the contention? It doesn't make any sense, Christine.
So thank you for the I don't think there's a question there, but you know the timeline is has been established. Multiple aspects of the program have changed from the original relative dates as initially outlined by the program. I hear your feedback and your comment about interest in adjusting the objection period timeline. So thank you for that. Thank you for that comment.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Mason Cole with Donut Inc. for Christine Willett. Please go ahead.
Hi, Christine. My question is about the independent objector and his timelines. Is he bound by the same March 12th deadline, or will there be a period of time where he evaluates what strings have been objected to and what haven't, so that he doesn't repeat objection work that's already been done by other parts of the community?
So, Mason, thank you for the question. So the independent objector is bound by the same timeline as all objectors. He, you know, as I think we're all aware, has not filed any objections to date. He is certainly going to consider, prior to his filing, any other objections and would seek to review any other objections which have been filed and would consider that in the objections which he submits.
Okay, and just one brief quick follow-up question is, if at the deadline there's repetition of objections on the same string by someone withstanding and by the IO, is the IO then obliged to withdraw?
So, Mason, if I understand, you're asking if the independent objector is obliged to withdraw his objections?
Right.
If another objection.
Correct.
Yes, if it's the same grounds. He could withdraw his objection, he could withdraw his objections during that same window, through the March 13th period, and the providers have discussed the concept of aggregating, merging objections. So that was another possibility. Don't believe that would be the case with the independent objector, but that would be determined by each of those panels.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Christina Rosette with GNSL. Please go ahead.
Hi. I have a specific question for WIPO and then a general question with regard to the expert panelists generally. With regard to WIPO, the question I have is rigorousness of the standing examination, because potentially, depending upon what the market issue is, you could end up with a situation in which you really get into the merits of the objection itself in order to determine the standing. So I was hoping that the folks at WIPO could give a little bit more color to that. The more general question is whether or not the providers have on their panels experts who are either representing other new GTLD applicants or are employed by entities that represent other new GTLD applicants. And if such experts are included, I'd be curious as to why.
So, David, thank you, Christina, for the question. David, could I ask you to comment on the issue of standing?
Yes, absolutely. And thanks, Kristen, very much for the question. In respect of the first question and the issue of standing, from the provider's perspective, I think we here at WIPO are going to be looking to ensure that a complainant provides evidence of an unregistered trademark right in the form of a registered trademark right in the form of a registered trademark certificate. And in the event that there would be a claim of unregistered trademark rights, that there's evidence prima facie to support that claim, I don't think that we would be looking to conduct that assessment as the provider in a way that would be prejudging the issue from the perspective of the appointed panel. It would be for the independent expert in due course to form an informed view of that question based on the evidence that is before them. But if there would be a claim that would be filed that had no foundation whatsoever in any evidence of trademark certificates or any evidence of unregistered claims, they would be the types of complaints that we would be looking to catch at the gate at the first instance. And a similar approach, I think, would apply with respect to the question of IGO names and acronyms. There are sources by which the prima facie existence of such a claimed right, a name or an acronym, can be ascertained, for example, by reference to inclusion, for instance, on the six-toe list of the WIPO Convention, among others, and there are relevant considerations there that would need to guide that assessment, for example, including the treaty status or otherwise of the relevant organisation or fund or program.
as to the question, the second question, from our perspective, as to the association or otherwise of our any of our experts with respect to acting on behalf of or in connection with any applicants, it's not a question I'm in a position to comment on with specific information at this point, because I don't have it in front of me, but I can certainly say that any expert that we would be appointing in any LRO objection procedure would be required to submit the necessary statement of impartiality and independence, and that this would include relevant provision for disclosure of any information that would concern acting on behalf of any applicant. And we would fully expect that if any of these experts would be or had been acting in connection with any applicant, especially one of the applicants that would be the subject of the dispute, that that information would be appropriately disclosed in the information, and that any resultant conflict issues would be appropriately managed as a result of that information. So I hope that's a helpful answer for you.
That is. Thank you very much. And Christine, in the interest of time, I'm happy to kind of get the views of the other providers, you know, offline, and perhaps whatever summary is put together later.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you have a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you're using speaker equipment today, you may need to lift your handset before making your selection. One moment, please. And I'm showing no further questions in the queue at this time. Please continue.
Thank you so much. So we've received a few questions in the questions and comments pod of Adobe Connect. So I'm going to ask Trang Nguyen to ask those questions for us.
Okay, thanks, Christine. We have a couple of questions in the Q&A pod with regards to community objections. The first one says, assuming that it meets the established institution and ongoing relationship criteria, could an industry trade association be eligible to file a community objection against a string or strings that is strongly associated with its membership's activities? And then the second question, which is also related to community objections, is about standing to object on community grounds. Is this analyzed as part of the administrative review? The problem is that the term clearly delineated community is a matter of appreciation. Will this be judged by the case administrator or by the expert? So those are a couple of questions regarding community objections.
Great. I would ask Hannah?
Yes.
ICC, is that something you could respond to, Hannah?
I think definitely to the second one especially. I think the first one probably actually addresses ICANN more than us. With regard to the question, who will look at the standing for community objections, this is very clear. This will be the expert. It will not be ICC. ICC, as the other providers also, is the administering institution, which will only look at procedural questions. The standing question is already a question with regard to the substance of the case, and we will not be looking at that. Accordingly, that will be in the discretion and will have to be decided by the expert after the file has been transferred, and the expert, the material given and so far, is Module 3 of ICANN with those definitions included and with admittedly also some wordings and definitions which are still open to interpretation and which will then have to be interpreted by the expert in light of the specific case, possible applicable law, and of course the arguments of the parties. I think otherwise I should probably actually, in light of that being part of the ICANN rules, give the first question back to you, Christine.
So, thank you, Hannah. So if I, the first question was related to would a trade association can be considered to have standing. So if the trade association meets the criteria in the guidebook for standing within the community, then it would be considered to have standing. So we'll be following and considering the criteria in the guidebook. The next question, Frank?
Yes, we have another question, and this one is for the ICDR. And the question is that what are the criteria that the ICDR is using regarding string confusion objections?
Tom, is that something you could address?
Well, I'm not sure I fully understand that. What are the criteria? We're just following the what's been issued in the guidebook in terms of standing, and that's all the ICDR is reviewing at that point. The decision making of the expert once appointed. If you just give me for a second. It'll be based on the documents submitted by both sides, the standards put forth in the guidebook, and the rules it determines to be applicable to the case. So there are no specific outlines, criteria that the expert would follow. Basically, the submissions and arguments put forth.
Thanks, Tom.
Great. Thank you.
And Kristen, we have a question regarding timeline clarification.
Mm-hmm.
Does the 30-day response period begin when I can post the objections or when the applicant receives notice from the dispute provider?
Great. The 30-day period begins once the applicant receives notice from the dispute resolution provider. We anticipate those will be close to one another. But it is based on the applicant receiving notice. Any other questions? So, great. If no one else has anything, I'd ask the operator, do you have anyone else in the queue now?
I'm showing no further questions at this time, ladies and gentlemen. As a reminder, if there are any questions on the phone lines, please press the star one on your touch-tone phone at this time. One moment, please. And I'm showing no further questions.
We have one final question on the Q&A pod for ICC. And the question is, can you please explain whether refunds apply for community objections? And if so, please provide details.
Excuse me, whether what applies?
Refunds.
Ah, refunds. Yes, well, generally the principle is that whoever wins, prevails in the matter, will be fully refunded the entire costs except for the filing fee. This is also the reason why, under the ICANN rules, both the objector and the applicant will be asked to pay the estimated full costs in advance as a deposit. So if ICC estimates the full cost to be, for example, 20,000 euros, then both the objector and the applicant each have to put forward 20,000 euros, and whoever prevails in the specific case will then be refunded those 20,000, and it's in the discretion of the ICC whether to also refund the 5,000 filing fee or not. But otherwise, yes, of course, there is a refund. Or maybe another question in that regard, also just to specify that there was a question whether if a case is withdrawn prior to the rendering of the decision, whether then a partial refund to both parties takes place. And yes, of course, in our cases, because the costs are actually based on the actual amount of work done, both by ICC as well as the hours spent by the expert. If the expert has not spent the full hours that we estimated and accordingly certain parts of the costs advanced by the parties have not been used, then, of course, the parties will be accordingly refunded.
So I'd like to, this is Christine, I'd like to thank our speakers today from our dispute resolution providers, ICDR, WIPO, ICC. Thank you, Tom, David, Hannah, for your participation. Thanks to everyone who's participated in this webinar. We appreciate it. As always, if you have further questions, feel free to contact the Customer Service Center for new GTLDs. Thank you and have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our conference for today. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.